Hello and welcome to 12 Years. This week we're going to be discussing a few different things and looking at the climate emergency as it is right now. Our first big piece of news is that the University of Nottingham has declared a climate emergency. There's been an art piece on the steps, people have been walking past it every day. This is very important because it means that the climate is going to be at the forefront of their policies. Other things we're also going to be discussing today are carbon offsetting and whether it is acceptable or not acceptable and how that relates to the climate emergency. And lastly, we're going to touch slightly on the Venice flooding. Starting with carbon offsetting, we had a debate over whether it was acceptable, looking specifically at the example of Meghan and Harry, who claimed to be all about the environment and living their lives in order to help the environment in every way they can. And yet they have been the centre of controversy because they have been using a private jet to fly around the world and then carbon offsetting, which, for those who don't know what it is when people plant trees in order to offset the carbon they'll be using when they're flying so that they will end up with a neutral carbon footprint. However, this is very controversial, with an article in The Spectator criticising this, and the article said, "Offsetting is worse than doing nothing, according to Manchester University professor Kevin Anderson, one of the vanishingly small number of people in the climate world who actually walks the climate talk. It is without scientific legitimacy, it is dangerously misleading, and almost certainly contributes to a net increase in the absolute rate of global emissions growth. Offsetting Harry and Meghan's emissions must demonstrate, with reasonable level of certainty, that their flight emissions, plus any emission consequences from the offsets, adds up to zero over a 100-year period. It is the immutable impossibility of making such long-term assurances that fundamentally challenges the value of such a claim." And I think this is a very valid point, because you aren't going to offset on the same day that you fly the carbon that you're using, because those trees take time to grow. So eventually you will offset it, but how can you be sure? How can you be 100% sure that all of the trees you are planting is going to result eventually in it balancing out? And also, this is very much pushing off the problem for the future. It will be solved in the future, but what about now? What about the problems that are being created now on this very day? Because while in the future, yes, it may even out, right now, that is just being added to the environment and it is just making the situation far, far worse. I had a couple of people in to have a debate. I was joined by Darcy, Genevieve and Grayson, and we talked about carbon offsetting, the royals doing it, whether they have another option. And the conversation then stemmed around to discussing the university climate crisis and declaration of a climate emergency. Many people use carbon offsetting as a way to neutralise their carbon footprint, and they feel like this basically justifies them to be able to do whatever they wish. Do you guys think, just starting off, that carbon offsetting is a good thing or a bad thing, or are you indifferent?
I would say it's a good start for helping the environment, but I don't think it's the answer completely.
I personally don't think it's a great idea to do carbon offsetting, because it just makes the rich feel better about their behaviour, and it's not actually telling people to stop flying and to stop indulging in activities which are like harmful to the environment.
The only people that carbon offsetting helps is the rich, because they're the only ones that can afford private jets and then afford to plant hundreds of trees after.
So let's look at a very specific example here. Harry and Meghan are big on the environment. They are supposedly only going to have two children for the environment, and they obviously have to fly around the world for their job. It kind of comes under that. I don't, whether you agree or disagree with that, we can also discuss. But they have their private jet and they fly around, and then they plant a lot of trees to kind of offset that. But a lot of people, when it came out, were kind of calling for them to go on commercial flights. If they're going to fly, go on commercial flights that are already going to fly and then plant the trees as well. So, like, I don't know, EasyJet, probably not EasyJet, but you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that we should expect our royal family to be on commercial airlines?
Would you support it?
I don't think it's a good idea, because I know that these days there are a lot of people out there that don't like the royals, which is, you know, fair enough, but it would definitely be difficult for their security to look after them, especially now with kids and stuff. I think as long as they're, you know, they're helping the environment more than they're hurting it, I think that it's okay that they do take private jets.
I personally think that realistically they won't be able to go on a public flight. Like, imagine the royals on a public flight. You're not, they're going to have so much publicity, and it's just not something you're ever going to see. It's not going to happen.
But there's flights such as, okay, EasyJet was an example, but probably not. But things, flights like British Airways that a lot of businessmen use and a lot of high profile figures, I guess, use. You know, if they were in first class, business class, I'm not saying that they'll probably be in economy with all the rest of us. Do you think that would be a realistic option? Because you said there that security for them, but the other thing you've got to think about is security for everybody else on the flight, because if someone was going to hurt them and try and do something to that flight, there's everybody else involved. Forgetting, like, what I said earlier about commercial airlines, if we think about more expensive airlines, do you think that would be a way forward?
At the end of the day, it comes down to security. So it's a problem of security, both for the royal family and for other people on the planes, because they are very high-profile figures, and the social and political effect that it would have on the rest of the country if something was to happen to them would be seismic, especially on a global scale. So I do believe that it becomes more of a necessary evil, even though it does come with an element of hypocrisy.
Do you think they should be planting enough trees just to neutralise themselves, or do you think they should be planting more than the carbon they're using?
I definitely think they should be planting more, because they have the money to plant more. At the end of the day, we're at a point now where we don't just want to be carbon neutral, we want to reduce the carbon. So I think that they should be planting more trees than the carbon being produced by the plane.
But where have we got the space for that?
Forests, like empty land, anywhere in developing world countries, there's lots of space. It's not an excuse just to say there's no space to plant trees. There's always space.
In the UK alone, 98% of the country is uninhabited and it's grasslands and fields and trees, farms. So there is plenty of space.
But we also have the thing that they are trying now to build more houses because we've got an increase in people coming in. And I'm not saying either way, I'm not saying I agree with this, but obviously if they're trying to find, there's a battle between them using these empty spaces to provide homes for people and to plant the trees. And while at the moment there probably is enough for everybody, as you said earlier, it's not the final solution, because eventually we will run out of space if you keep planting trees and keep planting trees, because people will then just cut them down to use them for farmland or...
But surely the environment comes before actual... just making room for people, because at the end of the day, if there's not enough room, like, there's not enough room.
But you would say that, but then you would think surely the environment comes before profit, surely the environment comes before a lot of things that companies do and businesses do, when in reality I feel like the environment is people's last thought process.
And by that idea, the people who would be suffering are people living in poverty, people who are homeless, because that's what a lot of these homes have been built for. This isn't a case of the rich will suffer. They will carry on with their private jets and their billions and billions of tons of pollution. And it will be homeless people that have to suffer for it, people in poverty. So that's not really the answer either.
And okay, so we just mentioned there about businesses not putting the environment first. That brings us on to the Union of Nottingham, who have now declared a climate emergency on campus. Do you guys think this is a good thing?
Yeah, it brings awareness. It certainly does bring awareness, but more action needs to be taken rather than just creating awareness and creating all this talk. They actually need to implement some action. So that's key, I guess.
Well, yeah, but this is the thing. I feel like because Britain declared a climate emergency in 2019, and it kind of meant it was supposed to put the climate at the forefront of all of their policies, which means for the university, technically the climate should be at the forefront of all their policies and things and events they host and actions that they're implementing.
it's still to be seen whether we will actually see whether this is the case or not. But as I mentioned to you all before we came in here as well, we have an art piece, an art project that is on campus. What did you guys think of it?
I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, I didn't. We've had flooding recently and I thought it was just kind of sandbags they put on the side, and it doesn't really look like art. I don't think it's spreading awareness at all. I mean, from what I've seen, there's nothing explaining it to students and, you know, staff saying, you know, this is why it's here to spread awareness. Maybe if they had put signposts up explaining it, so it, you know, it'd be a lot more impactful. But I'm not sure that art in that sense is necessarily the way to go.
I'd rather see more of the compost bins around, like they've got in Horwood Library, that you can put like food waste in, tea bags, than an art piece outside, to be honest. I don't really think that is going to make much difference. I don't think people are even going to notice that it's there.
The university do use the steps, I think, quite a lot for this. So when it was Suicide Prevention Week, we had the shoes of the students lined up on the steps, and that got huge awareness and huge coverage. But that was more in your face, that you had to literally walk around that, whereas these are bin bags on the side. I'm not dissing it. I think it's better that they do something more than nothing. So it's still, it's kind of, I think, something to signify and mark the action that they've taken.
The problem is sometimes art pieces turn into empty gestures. Like, just because they put an art piece there doesn't mean that anything is going to change. It doesn't mean that their policies are going to change. It's very much, it can be like the bare minimum. So I'm not saying that about the suicide prevention one, because I quite liked that one. I thought it was quite poignant. However, the rubbish bags, it is possible that that can turn into an empty gesture, unless they actually follow through on this climate change stuff, then it really is just an empty gesture.
Do you guys think that we should have a full-time SU environmental officer, or do you think the part-time job works?
I think full-time. If they're going to make a real impact, I do think they need someone full-time who's willing to make a full commitment to actually helping climate change, I guess. But I do still think that more action does need to be taken, like plastic water bottles. There's so many of them around campus. I think I've seen some plastic straws, like stuff like that. They shouldn't, like, they need to kind of reduce their intake on plastic around campus.
I agree. I think it's just, I think having someone full time would definitely be more helpful, because it would just mean that we'd get more done. Hopefully, there'd be more action being taken. There'd be more focus on the solutions of climate change, rather than making it seem a bit less important. I think it would definitely help the university a lot.
I think that if it was to become a full-time position, then they would not only have to find viable solutions, they would also have to be accessible solutions as well.
We spoke to Lee Taylor, our SU officer in charge of sustainability at the university, to ask him his thoughts on carbon offsetting.
So something else we're talking about on the show, it's not related to the university, just to get your opinion, is we've been discussing whether carbon offsetting is a positive or negative thing. What's your opinion on that?
Carbon offsetting is a last resort. So if you look at, like, for example, recycling is the low, it's like the last thing before just refuse on the waste hierarchy. So always reduce, then reuse, then recycle, and then refuse. Carbon offsetting is the equivalent of recycling in a lot of ways. It's better than nothing, but ideally you need to be reducing, first of all. Reduction is the most important thing to focus efforts on, and once you've reduced as far as you possibly can, then it's time to offset the rest. And even still, like, with offsetting itself, there's a lot of different techniques, there's a lot of different technologies. So you can offset through tree planting, which is, like, the least efficient way to do it. I know it's, like, probably the coolest way to do it in a lot of ways, especially with, like, Team Trees and Mr. Beast and all the stuff on YouTube and socials at the moment. There's a lot of spotlight on tree planting, but it's actually very inefficient in terms of carbon offsetting. You can purchase bits of existing, like you can purchase existing carbon sinks to protect them. So purchasing swathes of like rainforests to protect them from deforestation. That's a pretty good way. There's also things like solar technologies, hydro technologies. So you can invest in lots of different ways to carbon offset. And the effectiveness of those also needs to be considered when you're offsetting. Like, are you just going for the show of saying, oh, I've offset because I planted these trees, or are you actually going to consider the longer term impacts of, is that an established carbon sink? Is it going to become an established one, and how quickly? That there's so much to consider even within that. So carbon offsetting is just like an umbrella term in a lot of ways. But yeah, it should always be the last resort, but it should still, it's still an important and crucial part of a bigger structure.
So we looked specifically at an example of Meghan and Harry and how they were doing it because obviously they were flying around the world in a private jet to go to formal royal events. Do you think there's an exception to be made there, or do you think, as many people argued, they should be able to get on a commercial flight like the rest of us?
They absolutely should be on, as I mean, there's ways to actually do it without necessarily flying. Like if they're travelling, for example, Europe, why not go on a train? You know, or there's so many ways to reduce beforehand, and you should always reduce as far as you can before it comes to offsetting. So with them, for example, like, yeah, they're on a private jet. They could knock that down to a commercial airliner. They could knock that down to a train. They could knock that down to an electric vehicle. Road trip. Everyone loves a road trip, especially in an EV. And there's so many like Tesla charging points and everything nowadays. Do that. It's so much more fun. And it's not going to have anywhere near as much of an impact as a private jet. But even flying commercially, like, it's such a huge reduction still. And offsetting, like, offsetting flights is not that expensive either. For example, I went over to California in September for an event. It was something I had to attend, so it wasn't going to be like, it wasn't an option to travel in a different way because it's overseas. I know Greta Thunberg, she obviously has the ability to go sailing. I didn't have that. So a commercial airliner. Offsetting for that was only around £55 for a flight that's around a grand. And that was for both ways, was the £55, not just a one-way thing. Like, offsetting is always going to be that last resort, but it's not actually that hard to do. It's not that expensive, and it's something that's so accessible to people that once you've reduced it as far as you can, then offsetting what's left is actually going to be really easy and really simple.
But we won't see the effects, am I, correct me if I'm wrong, but we won't see the effects for a while, because obviously planting these trees quite young, it takes the time for them to grow and to eventually have.
This is why planting trees for offsetting is, it's not the way to go, really. If you're planting, obviously it is going to take those times, whereas actually you can save established carbon sinks, or you can look into, obviously, solar technologies. They're going to have an instant payback. It's something that, like, for example, if you're installing a photovoltaic array, or you're paying for part of a photovoltaic array, that's not going to improve its efficiency over time as a tree does. That's going to be, it's installed, it's immediately efficient. And that's a much more efficient use of your money when carbon offsetting. So it does just mean looking into what's the best way to take what you've already reduced down to zero.
We're now going to have our first song, which is called Pollution. It talks about water pollution and air pollution. It raises the issue that we are eventually not going to be able to enjoy our lives because of the air pollution, which links very much so into this carbon offsetting debate we were having earlier.
There was a time when an American who was about to go overseas would be warned not to drink the water. But now we have such a tremendous water pollution problem in our fjords and an air pollution problem also that if any of you are thinking of coming to the United States, I would suggest that you heed the warning in the following song.
If you visit
American city. You will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, we got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly. But they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink. Throw out your breakfast garbage, and I've got a hunch that the folks downstream will drink it for lunch. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
It is interesting that the Uni of Nottingham has declared a climate emergency, because there is a piece in The Guardian that was talking about universities and the risk that they face of losing their green statuses. Because they said that while young people call for urgent action on the climate emergency, universities are lagging behind, with two-thirds likely to fail their 2020 targets for the reduction of carbon emissions, and academic conferences are partly to blame. Air travel is estimated to be responsible for more than 2% of global human-induced emissions, and lecturers' flights could be adding significantly to the carbon footprint of many universities, according to transport data provided voluntarily by 67 institutions. It's interesting because more than 2% of global human-induced emissions doesn't sound a significant amount. That sounds like a rather small number. However, if you think about it, we only have a very small leeway of 2% with regards to the world heating up before the situation is beyond repair. And so all of these numbers, no matter how small they may seem, are actually incredibly, incredibly significant. We can hear what the Pulse had to say yesterday on the fact that the university has declared a climate emergency.
So on the 7th of November 2019, the University of Nottingham's SU voted for this state of climate and ecological emergency. As part of this declaration, the union committed to devoting additional resources to tackling the emergency, including the creation of a strategic delivery plan, publishing annual sustainability reports, setting a carbon neutrality target of no later than 2028, divesting from fossil fuels and entities which invest in these, and signing the SDG Accord. There is currently an art piece that's out on the Portland steps of lots of garbage bags that have been tied down to the ground with a sign up right next to it, which explains a bit about pollution and waste and why it's a problem. The sign states that the bin bags there is equivalent to the output of 6 hours of 2,100 kilograms of waste, which adds up to over 3,000 tons a year, the weight of a battleship. This is what the UK produces. So this display on Portland steps is to kind of hopefully wake up students to waste that has been put out there. So as Emily very Motley said during that song, and I'm just going to take credit for it. So I'm sorry. You know, we've heard a lot about school strikes, and we've seen, you know, Extinction Rebellion and all those protests and city strikes and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't really heard of, and neither had Emily, heard of universities striking and, you know, really kind of going against climate change before. Do you think it's important for the university to be making a statement as much as it is?
I think it's really good that the university are actually taking direct action now, because although we were obviously just mentioning the school strikes and the Extinction Rebellion, I imagine and know many university age students are taking part in that. So to then translate it into their kind of university lives, I think that's really important. And obviously I'm in first year and living on campus, and the amount of waste I see, you know, I think when you have this many people living together and students, I don't think we're perhaps the people who are the most conscientious about what we're using, and, you know, just doing small things like turning lights off and taking, you know, splitting things up into recycling. I think if we can kind of drum those ideas into students a bit more, then it's, we are kind of that generation that are going to make the change. So
absolutely, I do think that as students we often take the cheap route rather than the most sustainable route.
Yeah.
And it's also just like simple facts I think students sometimes miss out on, like, you know, pizza boxes aren't recyclable, and I've always walked past halls and see the recycling thing full of Domino's boxes. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Domino's during the song as well. And like, actually those can't be recyclable, and it's all these kind of just knowledge that needs to be put out there. And I think it's really cool that the SU is putting that kind of knowledge out there.
About the university's declaration of a climate emergency and the art installation that we can see out on the steps.
Okay, so first things first, commiserations on the climate emergency, but does this mean that the environment will be at the forefront of all the university's policies now?
It means that the union will have to consider its impact on the climate and the ecology with everything that it does. It means that we have to actually devote additional resources to tackling the climate and ecological emergency from our standpoint. So that's through our own operations as an entity, in terms of what we do in this building, our energy usage, our water usage, our staff travel, our logistics, everything like that has to be evaluated. But it also means, and this is unheard of for students' unions that declare a climate emergency, but it also means looking at student groups, so the activities of student groups, and what can we do as a union to encourage our student groups and help them become more sustainable, but also what can we do when they can't go any further. So we've set very, very hard carbon neutrality targets for 2028 or sooner, which is in line with Nottingham City Council. It's hard, but it's achievable. We know that it's achievable with the right resolve to do it. So now we have the mandate to actually go and do that, which is really exciting.
And we've seen on the steps outside that you have the art installation. Has been there for since Monday?
Yes, well, since Sunday, technically. We installed it on Sunday. It was 400 bags. Some of them have blown away. 400 bin bags, which we sort of wafty-wafty filled with air, put a bit of sand in them, tied them up with string. And that is the equivalent of 6 hours of waste generated at the university. That doesn't include specialist waste, so it doesn't include like the things that are collected for specialist handling, like our crisp packets or like medical waste. That's just landfill, recycling, and food waste across the campuses, which is 2,100 tons every 6 hours. We initially intended to do it for how much it was a day, which is over 8 tons, but it took us 5.5 hours with 5 people just to do that many bags, which is, it boggles the mind. But if you think, like, it took us that much just to fill them, how many work hours does it take the uni to make that much waste? It's madness. Over the course of a year, it's equivalent to over 3,000 tons, which we put a little stat on the graphics that says, that's equivalent to the weight of a battleship. Specifically, it's the USS Little Rock. It's around 3,000 tons. So we generate more waste every year across the campuses than the weight of the USS Little Rock.
Wow.
It boggles the mind. It really does.
That's just insane. Do you think the installation's having the desired effect? Like, what was the desired effect?
To create, or to grab attention, to create buzz, could get people talking. And yeah, I do think it's had, I know it's had that effect. I mean, every time I go out there, every time I walk past the glass windows, whatever that side, it's big. Always see people stood at the sign, reading the sign, reading what it's about. And then, as there's been news articles and things put on social media, in the comments, you just see people tagging their friends and like, oh, so that's what it is. Like, oh, mystery solved. And I'm like, yeah, good. It's creating a mystery. I love that. We need that. Because then it's getting people thinking. They're like, what's going on? And they're actually seeing and they're paying attention. And then it's like, oh, cool. The union's declared a climate emergency? I didn't know that. Amazing. So, yeah, it's really had a great effect.
It's a tough question.
Mm.
Plastic bags aren't recyclable.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you said you got 400 out there. You had 400. Do you think that the 400 bags that have been used for that is a good, like, the awareness that you're going to get out of it, do you think that is a fair reason to have used 400 bin bags?
They're not going in the bin. We're not recycling them. So this weekend, we're going to go back out there. We're going to empty them. We're going to recover the sand from them. We're going to go try and find the ones that have blown away. It should only be a couple. We tent pegged them down, so it should only be a couple that have blown away, but we're going to go try and find those. Every single one of the bags that we're able to get, we will return to the university for the university to use in the normal bins. So there should be absolutely no waste created from this. The sand will be returned into aggregate reuse. The string will create something out of it. We've got some really crafty, amazing people in our committee that will make some superb stuff out of it. Even the tent pegs we're going to try and give to events, see if they want them, because you always need spare tent pegs. So there's going to be no waste created from this at all. That was the intent from the outset of it, which is something that we've not really publicised too much, because, I mean, you don't need to publicise it. You shouldn't have to publicise that you're creating no waste. But I think it is something cool.
I think that's incredible, then, the fact that you've managed to get all of this awareness, and yet there's going to be no trace of it at the end.
Other than social media.
Other than hopefully a positive effect from people and their responses.
There should be no negative trace of it, hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully. And is there anything that you'd like to say on where the university is now? Do you think that we're in a stronger place than we were before? Or do you think this is just kind of a... what's the word I'm thinking of? So it's for show and nothing else is going to come from it.
No, it's definitely not just for show. As a union, now that we've declared a climate emergency, it puts us in a much stronger position. So in the policy itself, it wasn't just that we say that there's a climate emergency. What it does is it says, we're going to devote additional resources to tackling this. We're going to sign the SDG Accord. We're going to set this carbon neutrality target. And we're going to create a sustainable strategic action plan, which will sit alongside the main union strategy, and it'll actually say, here's exactly what we're going to do. It'll break down into exactly what's needed to actually tackle this over the coming years. So having passed this through, it gives us the actual democratic mandate to go and do that, rather than as just doing it and then not necessarily knowing whether that's the right thing to do. Now that we know, and it passed through unanimously too, so now that we have that, it gives us such a strong power to be like, this is what the students want to see. We can take that to the uni and be like, this is what our students have told us. Now you have to also do it, uni. It means that I, in my role as officer, I can go to Daryl, the CEO, I can go to the directors, I can go to the other officers and be like, this is what the students have said. We're going to do it. Let me do it. Give me resources, give me attention, give me effort. But let's make it happen. So it's really, really exciting. And now, over the next few weeks, next few months, we're going to be actually carrying through those actions, so developing that strategic plan. We've got a new staff sustainability committee that's going to be meeting to develop that actual plan. Obviously, we've got the ESJ Network Committee as well that are going to feed into that. So it gives us a real momentum to go forward and drive really positive change that will last for years to come, if not generations to come, because the SU is not going anywhere. So by setting these things out and actually getting us into a place where we are carbon neutral, where we are sustainable, where everything that we do is tied back to the SDGs, we're going to actually be creating a union that's better for everyone. And I think that's really, really exciting.
We're going to have our second song now, which is from a musical, a new musical, and it is about the climate emergency. It's going to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've got disturbing news concerning those in charge, the power they misuse. They speak in silence, thinking problems disappear. Sat on their lazy arses, fingers in their ears.
And they're repeating empty promises at home. The future's in a news and lit by the road. It's not a thrill, so ring the siren, make it seem. They say they've left us in a rich emergency.
Emergency, emergency. We need your hope, we need your urgency. Before we're choking on the swan, tell us, is this some crazy joke? Where the punchline is a flaming world, where you've left us in the ashes, laughing while it crashes at birth. And they might say that we should school instead, studying what's in store in our careers ahead. But education's just a way to waste the days, if we are simply waiting for the world to set ablaze.
And so we stand and march outside of Parliament, together for this cause except a president. We are the chorus of the people first in line, to face the suffering when nature calls in time.
Emergency, emergency. We don't need your hope.
Last thing I wanted to talk about today was, of course, the Venice flooding. Now, we've had significant amount of rain in Nottingham itself recently, in and around the area, the entire country, but nothing compared to Venice. Now, the Italian council in Venice was flooded just minutes after they rejected climate change policies. But we are going to hear what the Pulse had to say this week on the issue of Venice flooding.
Italy is set to declare a state of emergency in Venice after the Italian city was engulfed by 1.87 metres of high water levels. This caused flooding to the historic basilica and cutting power to homes. More than 80% of the city is a UNESCO World Heritage site and was underwater when tides were at their highest. Italy's Prime Minister described the flooding as a blow to the heart of our country, and he said that the government would now act quickly to provide funds and resources to try and prevent similar flooding in the future. And he's also said that the government would accelerate the building of structural defences for the lagoon city. And I've mainly wanted to ask the panel what you thought about the situation in Italy, especially because in recent months we've seen the emergence of groups such as Extinction Rebellion, who've been making the headlines a lot recently. And I think just globally we seem to be becoming a little bit more concerned with climate change, and I want to know what you guys think we can do to kind of help the situation, and if the Italian government can be doing more or not, or if what they've kind of said they will do already is enough.
I definitely think it's a massive, you know, it's a bit of an eye-opener, and I think it's a massive shame that, you know, Venice being such a lovely city has been damaged, and It definitely brings it to attention the sort of the environmental crisis at the moment. But there could be more that, you know, to be done, and there could, you know, we could have some help from other sort of countries, like we did with, was it the Notre Dame that recently was on fire? Yeah. There could be more that we could do to helping, and I think that definitely, you know, environmental groups could latch onto this and say, look, you know, look what's happening to our, you know, our lovely cities in the world. You know, we should be doing more to prevent this.
Not only does more need to be done on the climate change side of it, I think more needs to be done for conservation as well. I mean, it is very historical, and it is, for a lot of people, their heritage. So I feel like in the meantime, while we're sorting out climate change and we're trying to do more for the environment, then like these historical sites should be protected, and they should be trying to conservate as much as they can. Because otherwise, once this stuff is gone, it's gone. And there's nothing we can really do about it past that. And I think that in the meantime, it is a good idea just to, if this happens again, just to have more sort of policies in place.
Sunrise, what about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing feels? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the blood we've shed before? Did you ever stop this notice, this crying earth, this weeping shore? You pledge your only son.
by flowering fields? Is there a time? What about all the dreams that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the children dead from war? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth, this weeping shore?
Thank you so much for listening to today's 12 Years, where we've had a bit of a roundup over what is going on right now in the world and the big controversial topics. Listen next week, where Sarah and Killian will be taking you through the big issue in more detail, that is fast fashion. We touched on this a couple of weeks ago. They are going to be dedicating an hour to it, really discussing it and looking at the debate. If you'd like to have your say, then tweet us at URN1350 using the hashtag 12 years.